The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And it really was a wake-up call, because I was thinking, just after I had lost my position in corporate America, I said, I was driving down the freeway and I was heading to a networking appointment. And I asked myself, is starting a business, I was thinking about writing a book, is starting a business and writing a book the right decision?
Right.
And all of a sudden, Mitch, something popped up from the freeway and headed straight at me. I closed my eyes.
It wasn't a thought.
My face. Huh?
It wasn't a thought. It was an object.
There was an object, and all of a sudden, this object is hurling straight at me. And I closed my eyes, I put my hands over my face, and I heard this big whooshing sound and dinging going around in my front seat. And
holy.
I found a shattered windshield, a softball-sized hole in the windshield, and a 4-foot, 5-pound semi-truck's tire iron in the front seat.
That shot off of a truck that was ahead of you on the... Holy...
Exactly.
Okay.
It just catapulted towards me. I got off to the side of the road. I got off the freeway, landed in a parking lot. I called the police.
Did the truck even know that? He probably didn't even know, right? He had no idea.
Didn't even know.
Wasn't secure, and the thing just
exactly.
Out. Okay.
And I called the police, and I was waiting for them to arrive, and shook off all the shards of glass, though not a scratch on me. And each police officer came on scene that day, and they each said, "Ma'am, you must be on this earth for a reason." And I had moments earlier been asking, is starting a business and writing a book the right decision?
Well, you obviously weren't getting the message before, so, you know, God said, listen, she's not getting it. So there's no lightning storm going on right now. So fly something through her windshield, but make sure she doesn't get hit. Maybe she'll pick up on the message.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests, where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com, or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Lisa Minini, president of Accelerate Associates and founder of the Business Innovation Lab. And I show businesses how to scale their business in alignment with their contribution and understanding their human hardwiring so that they can move their hidden culture to an expanded created culture.
All right, Lisa. So thanks for coming on the podcast today. Where are you located again?
We are in Michigan.
Yeah, I thought you were in the Midwest. So is it cold today?
It is cold and raining.
It's getting a little warm this weekend here in New Jersey, but it was brutal. We were in the 20s and stuff. But I figure you're in Michigan. That's like spring for you guys, right?
Well, it kind of is. You know, if you know, you've got... raining when it should be snowing, we're good. Like,
right.
We're okay with that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've never been up to, I was in Detroit for a while. We visited Ann Arbor and we visited East Lansing for colleges. And then my son's at Indiana. So we did like a whole swing there, but I think that's like the only time I've been in Michigan.
Well, you got to go what we call up north.
Like on the lake.
You got to go north. Oh, absolutely. And Mackinac Island, which doesn't allow any motor vehicles on it and very historic, very beautiful. You would love it.
Summertime.
Yes. You have to take a ferry to the island. So yes, definitely.
Okay. So today we're going to talk about you and you can tell us your whole story, how you got to where you are and your whole coaching program, Accelerate, the system that you've really created, right? You're not a franchisee or a licensee of some other program. These are skills.
We have licensees that
right. You license it to other people.
Yes, correct.
All right, good. Well, let's go back to where you're from and what your upbringing was in terms of education, how you got to where you are now to be an entrepreneur in this space.
Sure. Well, I'm a native of Michigan. So I went to school here, got my bachelor's and master's in Michigan, Central Michigan University is where I got my master's degree. And I enjoyed a very successful career, Mitch, in the corporate arena for close to 17, 18 years. Okay. And I enjoyed it. I got to an executive position fairly young in my career and navigated a lot of organizational change, whether it was mergers, acquisitions, divestitures. And I really enjoyed it. And that's what I knew.
Okay.
And one day the decision was made to dismantle the division that I worked in. And I said, you know, a lot of people told me, Lisa, you really should own your own business. But I'm thinking, like, I've been an employee my whole life.
Right.
I know about starting my own business. And I think did you go through that too, Mitch? Like,
well, I've always been an entrepreneur since I was young. I've always had little businesses during the summer and doing things. So when I went into law, I never really saw myself as like being a partner in a big law firm or going into big law. I just never, you know, I did the summers thing where I worked different places, worked for a judge, clerked at a firm. Mm-hmm. It just never really, you know, my dad's an entrepreneur. He's in the insurance business. He's always been a salesman all of his life, you know. And so I kind of always migrated to, you know, being out on my own or partnering in a small firm or, you know, being a street lawyer, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it's the same thing. It's like, I couldn't imagine after 17 years of doing what you're doing to say, okay, now, I mean, I guess you didn't even know what you were going to do at that point, right?
Are you going to open
a retail shop and sell dresses? I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I figured, well, you know, I could, you know, throw out a shingle and do some consulting work. And, you know, this was post 9/11,
right.
You know, after 9/11 and everything kind of got depressed. A lot of corporations were laying off. And so that was what was happening. And so I had to lay everybody off, including myself.
Right.
And I literally was the last person out and of the old division that I worked in. And, you know, I called the corporate office and I said, you know, I really don't think I should be doing my own separation agreement.
And they're like, oh, yeah, there you go. Definitely not. Or that's OK. Have your lawyer do it and it'll be all in your favor. You know, whatever.
That's right.
I've done those before with small companies and I'm a large.
You know, even though I knew it was coming, it was just a really big wake up call for me because, you know, interview after interview after interview, because I was playing the fence. And so whenever you get a lot of those corporate people that say, well, maybe I want to play in entrepreneurship, you know, there's a fear there.
Of course.
Fear there for me.
Right.
And so I played the fence for a little while.
Yeah. You want to go the safe route, what you know, you interview, you go to another corporation and you keep playing. But eventually, I think you're safer being out on your own and a consultancy, but okay.
Well, you know, that's interesting in that you said that, because especially if you have a diverse portfolio, you want to make sure you have a resilient business. And I think that's what showed a lot of entrepreneurs this year is do they have a resilient business model, which we've been preaching for now. I've been in business for close to 18, 19 years now. And so when And it really was a wake up call, because I was thinking, just after I had lost my position in corporate America, I said, I was driving down the freeway and I was heading to a networking appointment. And I asked myself, is starting a business, I was thinking about writing a book, is starting a business and writing a book the right decision?
Right.
And all of a sudden, Mitch, something popped up from the freeway and headed straight at me. I closed my eyes.
It wasn't a thought.
My face. Huh?
It wasn't a thought. It was an object.
There was an object. Right. And all of a sudden, this object is hurling straight at me. And I closed my eyes. I put my hands over my face. And I heard this big whooshing sound and dinging going around in my front seat. And
holy.
I found a shattered windshield, a softball size hole in the windshield, and a 4 foot, 5 pound semi-truck's tire iron in the front seat.
That of my shot car. Off of a truck that was ahead of you on the... Holy...
Exactly.
Okay.
It just catapulted towards me. I got off to the side of the road. I got off the freeway, landed in a parking lot. And I called the police.
Did the truck even know that he probably didn't even know, right? He had no idea.
Didn't even know.
Wasn't secure and the thing just.
Yeah, exactly.
Out. Okay.
And I called the police and I was waiting for them to arrive and shook off all the shards of glass, though not a scratch on me. And each police officer came on scene that day and they each said, ma'am, you must be on this earth for a reason. And I had moments earlier been asking, is starting a business and writing a book the right decision?
Well, you obviously weren't getting the message before. So, God said, listen, she's not getting it. So there's no lightning storm going on right now. So fly something through her windshield, but make sure she doesn't get hit. Maybe she'll pick up on the message. So,
right.
Exactly. All right. Good result though. Right. Good ending. Right. Yeah.
And it was funny because, they each said that they said, usually what we see is people are impaled and obviously die. So, and I wrote the book, Me, Myself and Why, The Secrets to Navigating Change, which became the first chapter of my book. And what I don't tell people is just before that, I said, maybe I survived cancer. I can write about that. And, other people have. So nothing really dramatic has happened in my life.
You go.
Okay. I got the first chapter.
Yeah, that worked out. Now I made a note. We're going to put the link to the book in the show notes. So.
Okay, great. Thanks.
All right. So people learn about your book, but that is a great way to start the podcast. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Okay. So this was how long ago?
Well, that was when I was first starting my business. So, 18 years ago, 18, 19 years ago.
Okay. So at the age of 12, you had this experience, left corporate America, right? You look very young.
And thank you.
You're welcome.
No, I'll be celebrating. I'm in my 50s. So,
okay. I was 54 in December. So I'm getting up.
Okay.
There.
Well, you're younger than I am.
No secrets. Well, somebody said, oh, you look really good for 54. I said, I hope you feel that way in 10 years. I'm 64, so let's see how it goes. Because I have a lot of friends. 10 years make a big difference in
it does.
The guys. Yes, it does. They're like, oh, boy, they have no hair. You know.
Right.
Yeah.
You got your hair, so you're ahead of the game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, bless me, my mom, I think it's more on your mom's side. So my grandfather died full head of hair. So I think... on my mom's side. So I think I'm okay. My dad's side, all bald. So my dad has more hair than anybody, but I don't know. So like a knock on wood, I'm okay. So you wrote the book 18 years ago and have you updated it since then? Like there's been new additions or?
Interestingly, we have not. Well, we made some small modifications just shortly after we printed it. But no, the book is still sells on Amazon.
It's pretty sustainable. Okay, good.
And it has a shelf life. And this is something we also teach businesses. We have actually a workshop on how to become a self-published best-selling author too.
Okay.
A lot of the businesses that we work with, a lot of the business owners do want to write a book. And what's interesting is we always look at what the shelf life is. And there are some really interesting questions. I wanted to write a book because a lot of the books that when I wrote that were a lot about theory. And I said, theory's great, but it didn't really... like, how do I make this change? Like, it was really difficult for me. And so I wrote about all of those things that helped me make this career change. And early on, I had a mentor and he said, Lisa, I see that you're doing you're doing well, you're bringing in clients. And this is after and only after I committed to having my business. So
okay.
I often ask the question, are you interested in something or are you committed?
Right.
If you're interested, you'll do what's convenient.
Right.
But if you're committed, you'll do whatever it takes to succeed in that thing that you want, whether this is setting goals, whether this is a business.
Right.
You've got to understand what is at the root of what you're committed to. Like,
right.
Contribution that you're making in the world. And our contribution through our work is business abundance to cause global peace. Now people think, well, that's pretty lofty, global peace. We'll never see that. I've gotten, you know,
probably the not
said that, but this is the way we look at it. We know that when business owners are successful, that they give back, they usually give back to nonprofits and causes. Those causes help their communities and they create a ripple effect. And through that ripple effect, we can achieve global peace. And if it is to be realized, it will be realized through business owners who take a leap of faith every single day.
One small piece at a time.
One ripple at a time.
Right.
And that is our contribution. And when businesses get connected to their contribution in the world, they become unstoppable. And so we take a systems approach, which is a holistic view of running and scaling a sustainable business. And we talk about, you know, mastering your inner entrepreneur, and that is understanding your biological wiring, which is different from your behaviors. And that is a distinction that we teach. And people are like, oh, this is just all about behaviors. Well, no, it's not. It's really a nature versus nurture conversation.
Okay.
So, you know, we all grow up and we have things that influence us and our behaviors, right? When we're young. So like, what influenced you, Mitch, when you were younger?
Yeah, different things, business things, my father in business, people that I knew, experiences that I had, things that I had. Yeah. Dreams of the world. I think that you had called it versus whether you are committed to something versus what was the term you used?
Interested.
Yeah. Interested, you kind of like circle the wagons, you look at it. I think committed is more like not an if, but a how, right? So if you're committed to something in your mind, right? I think you don't think that this might succeed. You just figure, well, how can I make it succeed? If you're interested in it, you're kind of like, well, will this succeed? And you're just not really committing yourself. Fence. Yeah, you're on the fence. You're kind of looking in the window. You're going, well, you know, and I think that there's a lot of people like that who they want to be committed and they don't realize that they're really not. And it's holding them back, you know, because I see that on a constant basis. And maybe that's why failure rates are very high with young businesses, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you know, it was interesting. I asked a business owner, and he was getting all of his goals together. And I said, you know, you've got a lot of goals. And he goes, yeah, you know, I have this recurring thing where I set all these really lofty goals and then I don't achieve them. And then he feels, you know, it's a spiral down. Then
exactly.
Successful. He's and I said, you know, I want you to ask yourself, are you interested in that goal? Or are you committed to it? And that changed his whole view of how he even set goals.
Right. Yeah, because maybe they were too big. You can't eat an elephant in a day. You got to set things that are achievable, that you know that you can achieve so you can get to the next level. I want to go back though for a second because we were in a parking lot. A tire iron had just flown through the window. The police said, it's amazing that you're alive.
Yeah.
Then you started working on your business, I guess, which was more of a consultancy at that point, right?
Yeah.
And so take me through that. And you wrote your book.
Yeah. So I was kind of writing the book and got my first chapter after that.
There you go. Bingo.
And I was just putting in there a lot of questions. And I think that's why the book has staying power, because it asks questions that as you're going through your change, you ask yourself, and then it becomes very insightful and people see for themselves what they can create in their life. And from that moment, I had a mentor ask me, and he said, you know, Lisa, you know, I started getting things going, and I talked to him about human biological wiring and the systems I was putting in place. And he said, you know, Lisa, can you teach this? Like, you've got something here beyond what you're using. Can you teach other businesses to do this?
You mean other coaches or other advisors?
And other businesses that even have been established for a while, you know, the 25 employees, the 30, and how do you scale it? So I said, yeah. And so what I developed was our signature program, our Entrepreneurial Edge System.
Okay.
And from there, it developed over the years, and we've been teaching this for, you know, almost two decades now.
Where did the thought about the, you know, biological wiring and the research that you did on, where'd that come from? You're not a neuroscientist, so.
Yeah, some of that came from my corporate experience, right?
Okay.
Even in corporate, I was using different instruments and realized that, oh, you know what? This is more than just behaviors. This is biological wiring. And I continued using that because it's just such an aha moment when people realize what's underneath their behavior. So there's a nature versus nurture conversation we have. So you don't behave the same way that you did when you were 18.
Right.
Thank
you. Because experience has affected your...
right. Experience, family, education, you know, and you have all of those things nurturing your behaviors, but your biological wiring is something you're born with. So as your neural pathways in your brain are developing, they're saying, how does this person best create ideas? How do they process thought? What is the environment they best thrive in? How much certainty or structure or information do they need for effective decision-making? And based on an algorithm, we can measure using psychometrics. So what's a psychometric? A psychometric is something that you respond naturally to.
Okay.
If you've ever gone into a department store, you went to the cologne counter or the perfume counter, you smelled it, you love it, you pass it on to the person who's with you and they're repulsed by it.
Right.
That's a psychometric. Colors are a psychometric and words are a psychometric. So we respond positively to some, negatively to others.
Sure.
Based on how an assessment is administered, we can actually measure each of those four areas, how you best create ideas, how you process thought, the environment in which you best thrive, and the amount of certainty that you need for effective decision-making.
Okay.
And so everything, when you're building a business, when you're scaling that business, everything is related to human biological wiring. Why? Because you got people running the company.
Right.
And so that's going to always influence what's happening, and it influences the culture of the organization. And how it's created, because it's created by the people that work there. So when we create awareness about human wiring and how it interacts with their business management systems, how the system of the business interacts with how you're biologically wired, we can increase efficiencies, we can scale much quicker, and we can improve the communication.
Now, what made you realize all these things? What made some of it was your corporate experience working with executives and stuff?
Yeah, some of it was the corporate experience. And then as we started rolling out our system, you know, people were having these aha moments. And then as we work with clients, they're exponentially increasing their revenues. We just got completed with one client. She got like a 497% return on her mentoring investment.
That's big.
That's significant.
So basically you had these thoughts or these ideas or these concepts and you started using them. You started working with clients and you started seeing results.
Started seeing results and... Okay. Created case studies and we still do to this day. That's all part of we believe in measuring, because you can't manage what you don't measure.
Right.
Can't manage what you don't measure. And so that is a critical piece of everything that we put in place when we reverse engineer what their goals are and then create what's called an existence system. Our existence system happens to be an app called the Acceleration app. And we show them how to create, not only create goals that they're committed to,
right,
but goals that are in alignment with their entire organization. Now, whether that organization, Mitch, is, you know, a two-person operation, or you've got 5 or 10 or 25 or thousands of people, those goals should always throughout the entire organization be aligned. And in many cases, they're not.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't want to skip over what you just said. A lot of people manage things without measuring them. They make decisions without knowing if anything they're doing in digital marketing is working, right? They don't measure that, or they don't really measure their employees and what the employees are doing, and they're all in the wrong place or handling the wrong jobs, or and they continue to make management decisions and purchasing decisions and marketing decisions based on, I don't know, they think they have information that they're making, but they're really not. And I find common in small business. Yeah,
it is. In fact, many of the business owners that we work with don't even have systems around managing their finances. And so I'm like, how do you know how you're running the business? Well, I take a look at my bank account.
Yeah, right. That's a really dangerous way to operate.
Okay. Red flag number one.
Right. Yeah,
if you're measuring things by looking at your bank account balance, then we need to talk.
Yeah, that might be a little off. Have you heard of Profit First? Have you ever heard of Mike Michalowicz's books?
I have heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Mike's been on my podcast, and we were just in a networking group this morning that I go on Fridays, and we were talking about Profit First. It is a system basically of paying yourself first, but it is it's a financial concept of basically breaking up bank accounts to an operating account, putting money aside for taxes, putting money aside for profit, saying, okay, listen, I don't have a lot of profit, but it can be 1%.
Right.
And realizing what what things you're wasting money on because you don't have a system. And then you start to develop a better handle of what that there are kind of profits you could squeeze out in the big beginning, and then you can start to be more efficient with what you do on the financial side to fit in with, because a lot of things that are too complicated on the, especially the financial side, right? Entrepreneurs are very right brain, right? We're all like that. You're a creative type, I'm creative. You like to create things and systems and all that type of stuff. We don't love the numbers, right? We don't like to do that stuff. So this is a way to make it easier to understand, more fun. They could, in theory, look at their bank balance because now they're managing things and saying, okay, well, I know in the operating account there's X, that's not my pay, so I'm not going to accidentally spend the money that I need. But it's a good system. But I think you're right. People don't look. The pandemic did that to people, right? The smoke cleared, the cash flow disappeared, and they were like, oh my God, I'm not making any money. Like, because cash flow hides a lot of things, and you could be very sloppy about stuff neglect those systems when money keeps coming through the door.
Absolutely.
Until it's too late.
They're just so busy with their clients when it starts to dry up, or if they're trying to scale it and get to the next level and they're wondering, gee, why can't I do that? They realize they actually don't have systems, or they have a lot of manual things.
Right. Yeah, they're working on a spreadsheet or a napkin. I think that's a big challenge for a lot of small business owners, is going to the next level. They might not be the person who can do that on their own. A lot of people can't. They're very good at starting it up and getting it going and opening the shop, making the business cards, hanging the stuff on the shelf and that type of thing. But when it comes to now becoming a multi-location business with employees and systems, they kind of need large corporations have the same problem, right? Where they threw out the founder and they brought in a real CEO. Maybe the founder came back at some point, but it was the smart founder who said, this is not my skill set. I got to bring people in to work with me. And it's a challenge, I think, for a lot of business owners, which is why they need a track to run on, a system like we're talking about here.
Yeah,
but I like the whole thought about how it developed, because I think that helps people understand where you're coming from and gives them things to think about. So I like.
Yeah. And it really is a systems approach, because, and when I say systems, people usually have one of two reactions to that. They either throw up in their mouth a little because they think, oh, systems, it's hard and arduous for them. Or they're like, oh yeah, you know what? I love systems. It gives structure. It gives freedom. And it really
does. It does.
It gives you freedom.
Lisa, I think if we studied businesses that failed, we would be very hard pressed to find ones that failed and had a lot of systems in place.
Yeah.
Because that helps you succeed.
Yes, it does.
It doesn't. You can't measure things, like you said, without systems.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned it earlier, is surrounding yourself by the people that have the skill set to then take it to the next level. And right. What I find is that many businesses are not creating an organizational chart. One, they don't have one many times, even though they might have, you know, 10, 12, 50 employees, they don't have an org chart, which astounds me. But they don't have the org chart they're living into, you know, and there's nothing like having an org chart that you're living into.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
That has, how are you going to scale? What does that look like? What are the benchmarks that you need to achieve to add on that extra person?
But that's because you have the vision and you have the purpose and you have the plan. If your org chart's basically in your mind and you're like, well, I know Lisa runs the operations and John does purchasing and, you know, but it's basically fluid. Because yes. if John, you want something, you go to John won't help you. You're going to go to the boss now and say, listen, I really need to do this. You go, all right, go ahead and do it. And everybody's going around each other. You're not going to get anywhere. I mean, it's you can't do the things that you're saying, telling to people without having processes and systems in place. It's all about business planning. It's all about strategic planning, you know, a living, working business plan that changes and modifies. But if it's not in writing, you're going to forget things. I mean, just the nature of how our minds work. We're bombarded with stuff. We can't do that.
Well, and the employees don't know where they are.
Yeah. How do they buy into your vision? How do they follow your direction? How do they support what the goals and objectives of the organization are? If they're not in writing, they don't even know what they are.
Exactly.
They're going to have their opinion about what it is, and it's going to be different from employee to employee. Right.
And that's where the problems exist, right? Because then people are like, well, is that in the scope of my work or is that my position? Should I be doing that? And there's a lot of confusion.
Now, do you come into organizations where you then go to the business owner and say, look, I hate to tell you this, but everyone has a different vision about what they think is going on here?
Yeah.
It's common.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes it presents in different ways, right? So it could be employees are not engaged.
Right.
Or, you know, something's off. And so we have to get underneath that. Or, you know, it goes back to human biological wiring too, that, you know, if they are wired naturally to have a high degree of certainty, information, and structure,
right,
they're going to want to be trained. They're going to want to know where they stand in the organization. They're going to want to know your vision, because if they don't have that, it actually leads to dissatisfaction.
How could you be engaged if you don't understand what you're engaging with?
Exactly.
You know, I was looking at a company recently. They have, I don't know, like 100 employees. And the guy's 92. He's selling his business. We were looking at it, a team to buy it. But the financials are a mess. And we've pulled back for a couple of months to see what happens. But so I said, well, what's your organizational chart? Well, you know, this guy does the purchasing. And this guy runs sales. And this guy runs this division and everything like that. I said, okay. And here's our organizational chart. It wasn't an organizational chart. It was a business flow chart if an order comes in the door and the departments that it goes to and how it gets out, and it was a mess, by the way, but I go, yeah, but okay, you own the company. Who's the president? You said such and such runs that division. You own the division 100%. So he's the president of the organization? No, he runs that division. Well, who runs the other division? Well, this guy does the purchasing. This guy does the sales. Well, I thought you said the sales guy does, he doesn't do sales for the other group. No, no, they use outside reps. So you can't expect the employees to be efficient and effective if they don't know anything beyond their desk and what's happening in their little world and how it affects the rest of the organization. Because they can think what they're doing is right, but it's really sabotaging other things along the road.
Yeah. And great point, Mitch, because what they're doing, they're only seeing their piece. And this goes to how systems are interconnected. Everything is connected. But if we don't look at that, if we don't even approach that in any way, like you said, it could look like they're doing it the right way.
Right.
It's having a ripple effect throughout the.
Yeah. And you can't fault the employee for that.
And you
haven't given them the vision. Right.
Right. Right. And so that's when we have conversations of what's missing in an organization. You know, is there power, accountability, authority, or responsibility missing? And where is it missing within the organization? And when you put it in, what difference would it make for the organization achieving their contribution in the world?
Right. I get questions asked a lot. Business owners come to me. They say, listen, we understand that you do shared general counsel. You know, come in. We can't afford a full-time general counsel. So we look to guys like you. What can you do for us? And I said, well, that is a loaded question. I mean, I have to come in and understand your structure and your corporate structure and your agreement you have in place and the people you work with and your employees and your risk assessment, put together a whole picture of what you're doing and then be able to make recommendations. And along the way, as we go, set you up online, make sure your documents are there. If, you know, what happens if your partner dies? You're going to be in business with his spouse. I mean, those kind of things.
Right.
Right. And they want this like little answer in a box. Like, well, what are you going to do for us legally? I have no idea.
Right.
You know, so.
It sounds like you got a good idea for, you know, an assessment that they can take an assessment first.
Yeah. I've been building that as a Google form where they could go answer basic questions to give me enough feedback to say, all right, at least I know where to start. There's always surprises along the way. You know, I'm in a file. I'm sure you find this too, right? I pull something out of a file, right? And I'm like, what is this? Oh, let me look at that. This is like, you have a judgment against somebody and you're collecting. Oh yeah, well, we used to own this other thing. And then this happened. I said, yeah, but this is in your dad's name. Didn't he die 27 years ago? Yeah, we got to fix that. And things start coming out of the woodwork. But if you don't, like you said, put these processes in place, you can never, they just hide themselves.
Oh, sure. And not even on purpose. It's just.
No, it's not intentional.
It's just busyness, buried, you said. Right?
Yeah, you're just busy trying to be successful. But you don't realize without someone like you that you're on a hamster wheel.
Yeah.
You don't realize because the wheel's moving and you're sweating and you feel good about it. And then you finally get off the wheel and you look around and you go, my God, I'm in the same place that I was when I started this. So I think that that's why I'm very intrigued by what you do and how you're doing it, because, you know, you're not just, I mean, look, I have a lot of good friends who are coaches and they're good and they work with people, but they don't really have, and I apologize to any of my friends, because maybe I'm completely wrong, but as from what I see, they don't really have a process that they take people through. I'm not saying you should treat everyone the same,
right?
But the process in itself, the structure, I'm sure, is the same to start and then gets adjusted as you get to learn more about the client, right? I mean, you got to start somewhere.
And actually, it's one of our workshops we teach on Create Your Signature Program, because they don't know.
This is a workshop for the licensees, right? Not for...
No, it's for any...
for the business owners? Okay.
Any business owner can come. And it doesn't matter what size of the organization. It's interesting that a lot of... I'll give you an example. A woman who owns an insurance agency.
Okay.
And she's like, well, you know, I'm insurance. What, you know, we sell insurance. I'm like, well, you have a unique... You have a unique way that you work with your clients. Now, let's take a look at that, map that out, And what we came up with was a very distinct program that she does. And I said, you know, this is not distinct. This is not part of your agency. You could actually white label this and sell it to other agencies. And it was just a process that she had. So
it hadn't occurred to her that it was this unique process. Yeah.
Never occurred to her. Right. And I would assert that many companies out there have a signature, and I'm going to call it an asset,
okay,
a signature asset that they don't realize that they have, but they have a unique way or a unique product and way to work with clients that is unique and distinct to their business.
Right.
But they're not capitalizing on it that could make a difference in them distinguishing themselves in the marketplace.
Well, without that, you really don't have a unique selling process. You're just trying to sell product. You get caught up with price comparisons. You get caught up with all that stuff and you don't, you're not viewed as, you know, why would I go to Lisa? Well, you know, she shopped my insurance around and gave me the best package that I have. But that doesn't mean in 6 months or a year, I'm not going to reshop it around. There's no reason to go back to Lisa. But if Lisa has a system and the way she handles my business and the service she provides to my company is something that is, you know, invaluable and I'm not going anywhere.
Yes, exactly.
How much money are you going to save me for me to give up the experience of working with Lisa and being taken care of by Lisa? There's a lot to be said about that. And a lot of business owners miss that, right?
They totally miss that. You're spot on, Mitch. Yeah, they totally miss that.
That's good. It's a Friday and I'm spot on. So that's a good sign for the weekend.
There you go.
Because it's
going
Friday.
Into the weekend with a plus, right?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, and they miss it. And it's what makes them unique in the marketplace. And so then that's used as part of all their marketing. And they're not like every other insurance agency. They're not. Right. Now they've distinguished themselves. This is what is different. And then here's where your referrals come in.
Right.
How people are referring you because, you talk about this. That's interesting. You know, a lot of people will say to me, you know, Lisa, I've heard very similar things about human wiring because they're referring to a lot of the behavioral assessments that are out there, of which I'm certified in, and they're great. Yeah. There's nothing wrong there. It's, but they said, you know, the way that you have integrated this in every aspect of business through the systems that are set up to work, to how people are aligned with the work that they do, to the culture of the organization. They said, I've never seen anybody take that holistic approach. You know, because we talk about work like life balance. And when I talk about their existence system, I'm like, okay, what about your domains of life that are personal? And they look at me like a deer in the headlights. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, you espouse as an organization a work-life balance, and yet you're not working with your employees on some of their personal goals, what's important to them about their career.
Right. You know,
systems that align with that. So if you're espousing that's part of your company culture, how is it getting translated into action or programs? And so as we have these conversations, they're like, wow. So we expand what's possible for them.
Right.
And what's possible for the business and some new markets.
Right. They never even thought about it.
I worked with a company that had about 25 to 30 employees at the time. And we looked at their portfolio and I said, is it diverse enough that your portfolio mix in the kind of business? And they looked at it and they're like, we didn't realize that 80% of our revenue was generated from one client.
Yeah, which is a very dangerous way to operate.
Very dangerous. And so within 12
months. Law firms are like that too. They got most of their clients come from one or two attorneys. I go, well, what happens if they die? And I was literally looking at a firm once, I think they were an estate planning company firm, and they were looking for me to join them. And we had lunch and there was the guy at the helm, he's in his 70s, and all the other young attorneys who I think were mostly younger than me. And there came a question of my question, right? Well, where does the business come from? Who generates the business? And they everyone stopped eating and they looked at the head of the table at the 70-year-old guy. And they're like, well, he brings in the business. Now, what I knew or I had heard and they hadn't said is that this guy had some health issues coming up. Like he had recently been diagnosed with cancer or whatever. And I'm like, well, what's going to happen when this guy's gone? And I didn't join them in their firm. He died, got very ill, and the whole firm blew up. People just ran.
Wow.
Because they had no capability of bringing in business. They had no system to keep, you know, business coming in the door. It's a dangerous, it's a really dangerous way to.
Well, and to your point, the system and the skill.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they had the skill. That was probably what made me walk away. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't even bother looking at the skill level. Right. That needed somebody with his skill to do that.
Right. Well, they think attorneys have legal skills. What else do they need?
Right. Right.
That's not good. But I think your point about, you know, having a unique selling proposition, I guess that's an overused term, but, you know, makes you referable. Like, I think a lot of people don't think about that when it comes to their business. Am I referable? You know, just because they're saying, oh, these are the kind of people I work with, I hope you refer me, doesn't make you referable. It's got to be a memorable story. I have no reason to refer you to one mortgage broker over the other if they both say they do everything. Because I think, you know, you're nicer than the other person. I mean, that's not, you want to have a reason why they're going to choose you, because in their mind, they get it in terms of what you do as being unique. And I think a lot of business owners, they just take for granted that they're referral. Well, we do, we care about our clients. That's not it. Right. I hope everyone feels that. That's not like a unique thing. That certainly shouldn't be a unique thing if it's unique. It's like, who's the comedian who said, you know, I'm a good dad, I play with my kids. He was like, well, that's kind of like something you have to do and you're supposed to do. You don't get an award for doing that.
Right.
You know, being, you know, caring about your clients kind of should be a given, but that's not the unique part of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's play a bigger game, right? Let's play a bigger game than that. And that's the whole part of the conversation around the contribution in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, when companies get really connected to their contribution in the world, they really do become unstoppable. And that's all part of sort of a distinction, too, that a company can have in the marketplace. You know, it's interesting. And it has a business implication or advantage when you do. Because then people see your employees, your team sees that there's part of something bigger.
Right. It's like attracts right? You get that energy going. You know, companies like this, they're firing on all cylinders. Their marketing is in line. Their employees love being there. And you know, and everyone falters over time, but, you know, they're really doing it all. And it does kind of attract you to work with them. Like, you're like, you know, I want to work. I don't know where their train's going, but I want to be attached to it, type of thing. And it definitely snowballs into business, into more employees, into the right people, into kind of pushing out people that don't belong in the organization, all that kind of stuff. It kind of works properly, you know, naturally. You don't have to disrupt the whole world because that person kind of goes the wayside. They don't fit in. You know, and they're gone.
They don't fit in. And it's more effortless.
Yeah.
You know, worked with a company
and term.
We worked on their contribution in the world. And, you know, they manufactured light poles. Is that exciting? Ooh, yeah.
Light poles, you mean like for utility companies, like on the road?
Well, light poles, for communities. You know how communities put up those big old.
Like downtown type of stuff.
In downtown areas. And so we worked on their contribution in the world. I said, you know, it's more than that. You don't just manufacture light poles. And what we came up with was they create a lifetime of opportunity, safety, and pride. Come work for our company. We provide a lifetime of opportunity, safety, and pride, not only outside of the organization for their branding, their marketing, their brand experience, but now for their employees.
Right.
We provide opportunities, safety, and pride.
Right.
And, you know, so now they build different programs around aligning with that.
Yeah, that's smart. Well, because I don't think people look at, and I have a friend, she was actually on my podcast. She's a recruiter where she works for companies and out by you. I think she's in like Cleveland or something. And her focus is on helping the company brand itself for the purpose of attracting and retaining the right people, not for attracting business. That's not what she does. And I think a lot of people, when they're branding their company, they overlook the fact that branding and that message, right, needs to and can resonate and attract the right people and retain the right people, right? I think it's Absolutely. Really important. It creates a culture.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. And that creates, it helps align the culture, and they actually actively and intentionally create a culture that they're wanting, rather than it just being a default culture, it happening.
Right.
Actively and intentionally creating it.
I'm going to make a note because I want to connect with Aaron. Okay, good. Well, I think that there's a lot of things, and maybe I'm redundant in a lot of the podcasts about what we keep talking, because there are principles that you always get back to when it comes to building a quality organization, building a place where people want to work, maintaining success over a long period of time that that can be transferred to next generation or new owners. It doesn't have to be part of your family. You know, you're bringing in new people, succession planning. And I think that, you know, it all comes down to a lot of these principles that we're talking about today when it comes to, you know, being aware of what you do and why you do it and how you do it. And is it unique? Caring about the people that you work with, caring about the world in which you provide service. And you're right. It doesn't have to be global. Right. You know, as things develop, you may think globally, sustainability, all that type of stuff, but you know, you start locally and, you know, as trite as things sometimes are, everyone serves a purpose in the world. I mean, what you're selling, people are buying for a reason.
Yes.
You just gotta figure that out. Obviously, you know, you're building light poles. You're like, yeah, we build light bulbs. Yeah. But if you didn't build the light poles, somebody get hurt in a parking lot when there's no lights on at night, you know, or they're walking downtown, they trip it. I mean,
they don't feel safe going down to
They get mugged because there's no lights lighting up an area where somebody can hide. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really, it has the ripple effect. It really does. I worked with a small company and she said, you know, they're executive relocation and organization services, the Betty Brigade in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we worked with her employees and their contribution in the world is peace and ease around relocation. And they would ask themselves, how can we give more peace and ease? How can we give more peace and ease? And as they were looking at their business, they even developed a handyman division. And so it expands your view of your business when you get deeply connected with what your contribution is, which is the outcome of the work. It's not what you do. It's not
the result of what you do or part of
the result of what you do.
Yeah.
And they give peace and ease. So how could they give more peace and ease? Well, people were saying after you cleared it up, they found out things that needed to be fixed and they created this whole handyman division, which elevated their revenue, right?
And improved the relationship they have with the customer and made it more of a sticky relationship.
All it those absolutely
things. Yeah,
absolutely did. And their employees got connected to that and they found that they were increasing their sales and their revenues increased 76% over 12 months. So these are the kinds of things that, although sometimes people feel like creating a contribution and or a vision and mission are, you know, things and you post it on the wall. No, these are foundational principles for every business and tools that you use purposefully and intentionally to move that forward, to scale the business and to build a sustainable business.
Yeah. I mean, we all need roadmaps. We all need to know where we're going. First of all, we might not want to be going in that direction.
Right.
And maybe we shouldn't be going. I mean, you and I, you come to visit me in New Jersey. I'm not going to put you in the car, put a blindfold on you and go, all right, why don't you drive me to New York City? You'd be like, what are you, crazy?
Thank you. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. But that's what people do in business.
Yeah. I mean,
they're not going to get, you know, they're not going to get hit by a tire iron on the highway, but
we hope not.
If, you know, metaphorically, they're driving the car with blinders on.
Yes.
And, you know, some people make it through, but we know the statistics, very few of them do. So it's not like we're like arguing, like you really ought to do planning. And people are like, nah, you don't really need to do planning. No, I think that the jury's out on that one, you know, come back on that one, meaning. So,
well, right. Yeah, but Mitch, I think a lot of times people don't do that because they're interested in having a culture and creating a culture, but they may not be committed to it.
Not at all, right.
They're interested in doing goal planning, but they're not really committed to it.
Yeah, they're just more interested in doing
bringing it through the corporation.
Right. Yeah, and their interests change from a day to day. They come in, They put out fires. They're dealing with they're doing business. We're taking care of business. You know, what is that? You know, and unfortunately, a lot of people, I think, get down the road, they're 10, 15 years, and they do, you know, it's funny. So businesses, you know, a lot of them don't make it to the second year. A lot of them don't make it to the fifth year. What about all the ones that struggle? Just because you made it to the fifth year doesn't mean you're not dissatisfied and struggling and not connected with your employees and all that kind of stuff, you know? So I think that that's a bigger number.
You know, Mitch, and I think to your point, I think what's important is, you know, a lot of business owners and they're about the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And I think what's important too is sometimes they lose sight of celebrating every single year the progress that was made.
Good point.
And focusing on the things that were accomplished.
Right.
And, you know, we always want to be this far ahead, but I think it's really important to take a moment and be grateful for the progress. And then over time, you see what the progress has been in our mentoring programs. We have a 36-month mentoring program. And we just got done with one of the business owners, and he said, and he was listing everything that he accomplished in those years. And he goes, I didn't realize this, but our revenue increased 4 times over 36 months.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, those are the kind of things that you want them to take a step back and say, wow, I guess I really did well. You know, but if they're
out of a what have you done for me lately type of an attitude.
Yeah. Right. But if you're always on that treadmill and you're not taking the moment to say, you know, what am I really grateful for? And what is the progress that I made here?
Yeah.
You'll get discouraged.
So I agree. And I think that you need to do that in order to also, at some point, you don't want to be on the treadmill. You want somebody else on the treadmill. But you need to look at where you've gone and how you're doing and then how can I then pass that on to someone else to continue to do that. So I can, because ultimately we don't go into business, just so we can work ourselves to the bone and, you know, have no life.
Right.
You talk about work-life balance. When you're a small business owner, you're working your life for pretty much the same thing. So if you don't figure that out, you're going to have a really quickly deteriorating personal life, family life, because, you know, you're living at the office and coming in every weekend and things like that. And at some point when you're, you know, older, when you're in your 50s, let's say, you know, in our years, you don't want to be doing that. You know, you want to see your kids growing up and all that stuff. What's the point?
Right.
Go get a job, work for somebody and work 60, 70 hours a week. You're not going to see your family.
Exactly. And that's why it's important, I think, if you're doing goal setting, to include what you want the personal goals to be too. You can't, those are not separate.
No.
You know, it's business. And that might be a domain on of itself, but you also have personal goals. Like, you know, you have a retirement goal. What is it? You know, for some people, you know, it's a semi-retirement kind
of. Yeah, they're going to work less. They don't want to stop working. Right. Which is fine. You plan.
But what are you going to do with
the business?
The
same thing as estate planning and business planning. You don't go plan your business and then just not do your wills and pay no attention to it. You can't. Right. It's all integrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know we're coming up in an hour, but I'd be remiss if we didn't get into your company, what it's called, how people can get in touch with you, even if they're a professional, to talk to you about licensing the program you know, that type of stuff.
Well, Accelerate Associates is a business mentoring and organizational development company. We have all types of programs depending on where the business is. We work with businesses up to 200 million. Some were larger than that. Our sweet spot is usually $500,000 to about $10 million. It's kind of a sweet spot that we have, but we have all different kinds of workshops and mentoring programs that we work with people, including customized training for different leadership groups. We've got a lot of really great programs like the Profitability Lab Introduction we do every single month. So I encourage business owners to come on that or to call for like a discovery session so that we can assess where they are in their business. So that's always kind of a really great first step to contacting us.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.